Welcome to the jungle. We go to hour number two. Great to have you here. Program brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. I mentioned we would go back to back to back. And then we get to your beef segment. We had Sacramento Kings head coach Luke Walton a moment ago. Right now we are joined by a jungle legend, a 10-time winner, the winner of the 1995 PGA Championship, the 2-time winner of the Players Championship, the creator of Secret Golf, the brain behind the SG Tour Golf app. He is Steve Elkington. Elk, mate, it's great to have you back. I have to ask you right now, where are you exactly and who are you with?
G'day, Jimmy. Mate, I'm on the fairway, number 5, Players Championship with PP and Jason Kokrak. Boys are getting some work in.
PP, Elk, of course.
Windy.
Elk. PP is Pat Perez, for those who do not know, but I'm sure everybody does. You tell PP I said, what's up?
He was going to talk, mate, but he's got a mouthful of this Mississippi coleslaw. I don't think he can say anything. He's just spitting everything all over the place. Got to walk way to the side of him.
Mississippi coleslaw. Elk is already out and running. All right, Elk, so the Players is this week, and you are there already. What kind of memories, Elk, come back to you when you head up to and end up at Sawgrass?
Well, you know, it was a big thing for me in 91, Jim, when I won. I was a young guy on the tour. You know, back then this tournament was offering up 10-year exemptions, so I was just a new guy. So, you know, it was a huge game changer.
Elk, what is the locker room for past champions like, and what's it like then to see your name up there?
Small, mate. It's very small. It's a secluded area, which it should be. You know, I think, you know, as you know, in horse racing, Jim, there's places that should be celebrated when you win, right? There's special little places that should be made for special places. Augusta has it up top, and they have it here to a certain degree.
Talking to Steve Elkington. I'm going to talk to you about Augusta in a minute. Elk, what about the course setup overall? How do you see it setting up this week due to the weather?
Well, this tournament, Jim, was always played in March. And March in Florida is a lot windier, a lot different conditions, which it is currently right now. When they went to May, it was very soft. The scoring was very low. So, as you know, the boys are pretty beat up, mate. They were at the Honda Classic, I think, what, 6-under won it. Last week at Bay Hill, I think 5-under won it. The boys are pretty wounded at the moment. And this week, I think, will be not much different. It's a little softer. PP's just made a nice-looking action at about a 5-iron into the fifth hole.
Hmm.
2 or 3 spits, front edge, 50 feet.
Two or three spits.
Some juice, and off we go.
Off we go. Steve Elkington is joining us. He's on the course with PP. I'm going to get to the fellas and the fact that some of them are beat up, Elk, but the 17th hole, the Island Green, is iconic. What's it like dealing with that hole on Saturday and Sunday when you're in contention?
Mate, it's a weak ruiner. You know, it's almost not fair a hole because there's so much extra stress that goes with it, you know, on a Thursday and Friday. Because, look, you don't have to miss hit a wedge or 9-iron very much to tow it or catch it a little thin and put one in the drink. And now you make a double, and now you're spending the rest of the week trying to get back into the cut. So, yes, it's very stressful. Now, as the weekend comes around, you're a little sort of numb to it. You know, for me, when I won in 91, it was almost impossible. I when I was walking around to the tee, Jim, when I was a young kid, my knees buckled. I was so nervous, and I caught myself. I thought I was going to go down, but I managed to somehow pull that off, birdie on 18. But similarly, in 97, when I actually won the tournament by 7, I was in much, much better shape. I was feeling a lot better, and it was a bit of a breeze. But nonetheless, it's a weak ruiner.
It is a weak ruiner. Steve Elkington joining us. Elk, in terms of the guys who are kind of dinged, Tiger is not there this week. Given his health, it's not a big surprise. How concerning is it to you for the rest of his entire year, though?
Mate, I was thinking about this question today, and the way that I've got this cataloged is we don't really know what's wrong with him. I mean, it could be his pinky finger. We never get the truth out of the Woods camp, which is fine. I don't care. But what it's told me, Jim, is that he is putting all of his eggs into the four majors basket this year. And he's going after 18. So to me, by this move and what he's been doing, he's not doing anything to jeopardize any chances. He can win at Augusta. he doesn't have to be 100% there. As we saw, he shredded him last year mentally or psychologically. He did it. He didn't have to do anything physical like he's done in the past. So I say that he is all eggs in on Golden's 18.
We're talking to Steve Elkington. Elk, speaking of guys and their health, let me jump ahead to Phil Mickelson. He missed the cut at Bay Hill. He missed the cut at the Genesis. He finished third at Pebble. He missed cuts at the Farmers and the American Express. How do Phil and his game look to you right now?
Mate, you have to get out in the woods to find him. That's what they say. But,
right.
You know, I heard TP's interview. You know, he looks a lot better. There's no doubt about it, and good for him. But it certainly hasn't come across on his game. We've seen guys like Craig Stadler, who was a pretty hefty guy, mate, and then he lost a bunch of weight and he couldn't play. And then he said he didn't have any gut sling anymore. I mean, maybe that's Hefty's deal. He doesn't have the right gut sling anymore.
Yeah, I mean, listen, he looks great, and credits to whatever he's done and the work he's put in. But, Elk, was his game better when he was hefty instead of, like, the male supermodel that he is now?
Mate, when I saw him hit those six chocolate eclairs in 2 minutes at Oak Hill, mate, he was unbeatable. So I'd have to go with B.
Steve Elkington joining us. Elk. Now, you and Jason Duffner had a pretty interesting conversation about his approach on the range and how different that is from when he's actually playing. What is the biggest difference from the range to the actual round in terms of what you're thinking about?
Well, you know, for those that think Duff, you know, doesn't say much, Duff, you can't shut Duff up when you're talking with him if you know him. He's a highly intelligent guy, and he's very analytical. And, you know, he understands, you know, he looks at the data and says, look, I missed the ball right. You know, I've got to do better. This is the things I've got to work on. He's a very much, like I say, looks like he's sort of, you know, doesn't think about much, but it's all in. Now, this course is a perfect course for Duffner. He finished third last year. Now, he has had some problem with his putting. I mean, he's carrying around a live snake for a putter sometimes happens to him. This is a tournament that he can do well in right here.
Steve Elkington, my guest for a few more moments. Now, Elk, Golf Digest did a survey of PGA Tour pros. One of the questions was essentially, if you were in a bar fight and you could choose one fighter to be with you, who would you choose? Ernie Els was the runaway winner. Elk, who would you choose?
No, I'd take Kokrak. Kokrak's out here with me right now. He's 6'5", 230, and he's angry all the time. So, yeah, no, he'd flip Ernie.
What about Ernie? I mean, Ernie comes off as one of the nicest, classiest guys. Does he have a switch? Why? I mean, he's put together now, but why is everybody quick to pick Ernie?
Well, I tell you what, I can't discredit Ernie, mate. I think he would go all right. I think he'd throw it with you, but I don't know if I'd... I mean, if I'm... You're asking me to go, right? I'm going with Crack. Crack's right. My guy.
I got you. I'm just kind of asking you, how do you think Els would do if it came to giving somebody the hands?
And then I might go with Fat Eric, the caddy out here. Fat Eric could hold him down at 400. He'd hold him down.
I didn't say who should sit on him. I said, how would Ernie do if he had to give somebody the hands? All right.
Oh, yeah. So, no, Eric, Ernie could go.
So how is the SG Tour Golf app going, and what do you have planned for this week, Elk?
Mate, we're good. You know, it's, you know, SG Tour has opened a new game this week. We actually, Hawk and I have been talking. We're putting up a new money game's come out today called Money Grabber. Mate, I like simple golf games because fantasy golf sucks. You got to have salary cap, the whole show. It just doesn't work for me. So this week's a game called Money Grabber. It's debuting here. You pick four players, and we're going to squish together the money that they make combined. You'll pick an A, a B, a C, and a D, all from world rankings. That's your team. And we'll do a projected money, how much money they're going to win all the way through the event. And the team that wins the most wins all the money.
That sounds pretty fun. That sounds fun. All right, so for those who are not already involved, Elk, how do they get involved?
We get the SG Tour app on the App Store. Go to the public game forum. Join the Elk and Hawk $10 game. We have a tour payout. So the top 64, just like the tour, Jimmy, that we cut. And the top 64 gamers make all the money.
Hey, Elk, Patrick Reed, cheater or no? Cheater or nah?
Well, he's already been penalized, convicted for what he did. So, you know, Reed, mate, it's such a big mistake what he did there. And mate, it's like the Astros, right? I still pull for the Astros, and you know, I've been listening to your show for decades. I mean, the baseball's had the biggest history of cheating ever in all the decades, but golf hasn't. Now, was the excuse, explanation from the Astros? No, wasn't very good. When the apology? No. Reed's apology? No, wasn't one. So, mate, he's wearing it. So, yeah, but definitely cheated, 100%.
He is a jungle legend. He is a 10-time winner on tour. He is the winner of the 95 PGA Championship. Of course, he is a 2-time winner of the Players Championship. The creator of Secret Golf and the brain behind the SG Tour Golf app. And now you know, Steve Elkington. Elk, have an amazing week. Great to have you back, and we'll do it again soon.
Thank you, Jimmy. All the best.
You got it, mate. Steve Elkington. Back to back. And when we come back, we continue. Your thoughts on Elk, of course. Alohi Gilman is an NFL draft prospect. You've got the NFL draft right around the corner. We're trying to get you as many conversations with as many draft prospects as we possibly can. And that will continue. The beef segment is coming up. Make sure you're getting me your beefs. We've all heard of Casper, you know, the sleep company with outrageously comfortable products and not so outrageous prices, from award-winning mattresses to pillows, sheets, duvets. Casper is transforming the way we all sleep, one snooze at a time. And with Casper's current end-of-the-season clearance, you can save up to 20% on the mattress of your dreams. The Casper mattress is an award-winning balance of comfort and support. Four layers of premium foam are designed to provide pressure relief for all-night comfort. Keep your back aligned with Zone Support. It's designed to provide extra support. And as always, free shipping and free returns. Save up to 20% on mattresses now through March 23rd, 2020. Offer expires March 23rd. 11:59 p.m. Pacific Time. Save 10% off the Essential, 15% off the Casper, 20% off the Wave. Limit one offer per customer and order. Additional shipping fees do apply for Hawaii, Alaska, and certain areas of Canada. Please see casper.com/terms for additional terms and conditions. Casper.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Rolling through hour number two. Nice to be with you on this Tuesday. My name is Jim Rome. I've got a beef segment which is coming up. You all make sure you get in line for that. Telephone number is toll-free in the U.S. and in Canada, 1-800-636-8686. Kind of a rarity on the program where we go back-to-back-to-back, but we do so for the right people, including my next guest, a former Notre Dame safety, named to the Nagurski and Thorpe watch lists. 74 tackles, 3 tackles for loss, 1 sack, 1 interception, 2 breakups, a quarterback hurry, a fumble recovery, 3 forced fumbles. He did all of that as a senior. He set a Notre Dame bowl record for most tackles in a game with 19 against Clemson in the college football playoff. The 2020 NFL draft gets underway April 23rd in Las Vegas. Alohi Gilman is my guest. Alohi, nice to have you on. How are you?
How you doing, Jim? Thanks for having me here today.
Yeah, it's great to have you here today. Nice to have you. All right, so you've had a little bit of time since the combine. When you look back on the combine itself, given all the work you put in to get ready for it, what kind of thoughts and memories do you have from that?
Yeah, the combine was an amazing experience. Definitely a surreal experience. You know, it's something as a kid that you dream of. But obviously, the combine has its stresses and its challenges as well. So, you know, overall, it was a great experience, you know, just being able to get that opportunity and, you know, to kind of live out my dreams a little. And so, you know, it was a great experience, and, you know, I learned a lot, and I'm just happy to get that process over as well.
I bet. Now, in the past, you've said that the story of your life has people thinking that you can't run or you can't hit or you can't play at the next level. Knowing that, what was your mindset going into the combine, and what did you want to show everybody?
Yeah, I mean, for me, you know, I've always been, like I said, I've always been an under-the-radar kid, undersized, not as much attention. You know, I had no stars coming out of high school. You know, so for me, it was just being able to go out there and show all these scouts and GMs and coaches that, you know, I can play on a high level, that I can do all the things that, you know, some other guys who are 4 or 5 stars coming out of high school can or could do. And just make a statement of showing who I am as a person, who I am as a player, and what I bring to the table.
And then so much of that is where you're from and how you were brought up, and we'll get to that in a minute. Alohi Gilman is my guest. One more thing about the Combine is it came to a close. NFL Network reporter Kim Jones did a report on the fact that you cleaned up the entire corner of the end zone, you collected all the plastic bottles, used up tape and trash, and you made sure you put it in the trash cans. Seems to me most guys in your spots would have let the cleaning crew do that. Why was that important for you to do it yourself?
Yeah. I think first and foremost, I think my mom would be pretty disappointed in me if I didn't.
Right.
But other than that, you know, I think, you know, it just, it's a part of how I was raised. You know, like I talked, like we were about to talk about, it's just a sign of respect. That's how I was raised to do things, you know, picking up after yourself, leaving the place better than how you found it. And I just thought, you know, it was important for me to do that. It's kind of just a natural thing for me at this point. So that's a big attestment to the way my parents raised me, as well as where I was raised.
You know they were proud. Now, in terms of where you were raised, you're from a small town on Oahu, and you said that played a huge role in how you became the playmaker that you are on defense. So what is it about your hometown that grows competitors like that? Because that's not unusual.
Yeah, man. So I'm raised from a small town on the north shore of Oahu called La'ie. And, you know, the way I was raised, all those kids are raised are as much like myself in that we're all raised very competitive. You know, the way that we were raised, a tight-knit community, everything that we did was competitive. We just love to compete, love to do the things that anything you can find, flip quarters, you know, street hockey, anything you could do. And that's just kind of how I was raised and kind of instilled that competitive nature in my DNA. And so it's kind of a part of me at this point.
Alohi Gilman joining us, former Notre Dame safety. Now, your father played football at Southern Utah.
Yes,
you refer to him as your personal coach. What was it like growing up with him and learning from him?
Yeah, so, you know, my dad is a big attestment to me as a player. He kind of groomed me into the player I am today. So he played as well. He also is a DB coach. He runs an academy down there called DB Tech Academy. So I played corner out of high school, and he's kind of, you know, groomed me into the player I am today, especially as a defensive back. He was a tough coach growing up. You know, he never let me slack off. He always pushed me to do more, to do extra. So, you know, he kind of instilled that work ethic, that sacrifice, and that motivation for me to take the next steps in playing at the highest level. And so a big attestment to him. And, you know, for all the people in Hawaii who want to get some work, DB Tech Academy, Coach Gilman, and he'll get you right.
I like it. Alohi, I got to ask you now, we talked about you being the fact that you were no stars coming out, but your journey to this point is even more fascinating to me in the sense that we're talking about you in the NFL draft. The story goes that when you were in eighth grade, for instance, your coach told you you would never play D1 football because of your size. What do you remember about that?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, story of my life, every level that I've played in, specifically at that time, you know, I was eighth grade, I was, you know, kind of started to grow the passion of wanting to play football on a high level, and I set goals out for myself at that time. Maybe, you know, people never have seen the vision that I did, and, you know, my coach told me you would never play Division I football, at most maybe D1 AA or D2. So, you know, but at that point it kind of struck a fire on me, and there's still the chip on my shoulder that was built from back then. So my chip is only bigger now, and, you know, so seeing all these things of, you know, weaknesses or things that he can or can't do, you know, I'm really used to it at this point, and it just adds more fuel to the fire. But, you know, it's also just a fun journey to be a part of, because I get another opportunity to show everyone who I am, what I'm about, and, you know, in this next level, playing in the NFL will be the next step.
Hey, listen, you were right. I mean, you were right when the coaches may have been wrong, but I'm curious about that vision and how you had that at an early age. Mm-hmm. I mean, you heard that. And as an eighth grader, maybe you could have decided to focus on something else. You were playing basketball.
Yeah.
You were competing in track. Why did you not give up? Why did you not switch? Why did you stay the course?
Yeah. So, you know, for me, I was a very visionary person. And the way that I kept that vision really was just, you know, something that I pride myself in, something that I've built into the core of myself is just having an insane belief in myself. You know, I was a kid who dreamed the biggest dreams. You know, I was very visionary, imaginary, and deep down in my soul, in my core, in my heart, I felt like I could do anything that I set my mind to. And at times when people were telling me, you know, you can't do it, or at times where, you know, people would try to shut those dreams down, I never let that vision slip. So, you know, even from high school, going to the Naval Academy, to Notre Dame, you know, that vision stays alive. And I just have this insane belief in myself that I can do anything I put my mind to and my heart towards, and that passion just grows inside stronger every day.
Alohi Gilman joining me for a few more moments. It is strong. Now, in terms of Notre Dame, you initially went to the Naval Academy, but when the Department of Defense changed the rule that would have allowed you to complete your service after a professional sports career, you transferred to Notre Dame. What was it about Notre Dame that made you feel like that was the right fit?
Yeah. So, interestingly enough, you know, Navy and Notre Dame play every year.
Right.
I played Notre Dame my freshman year. I actually did really good. I had 13 tackles that game. And, you know, coming out of Navy and Naval Academy, I had two options, was Notre Dame and USC. USC obviously being closer to home, you know, a lot warmer weather and whatnot. USC was coming off a Rose Bowl win, and Notre Dame was coming off a 4-8 season. And interesting enough, you know, as I went on my official visits, I kind of decided, you know, Notre Dame was the best fit for me. Just overall, just I felt like they were going in the right direction. The coaches were very honest with me. And I just saw myself being very successful there. And, you know, I was grateful and blessed to get that opportunity. And, you know, things worked out, and I'm very grateful for that.
You know, one of the rare honors you had also, you were a captain at Notre Dame, and you certainly earned that. How much of your approach to being a leader is about being a servant leader?
Yeah, I mean, that's everything. You know, if you're not a servant leader, people have a hard time, you know, being able to follow a guy who can't persuade and influence you. And I feel like for me, I'm always a guy who wants to help and serve. That's a part of being a leader. That's a part of being a part of something bigger than yourself is, you know, impacting the people around you. And I feel like that's something that I've grown in my perspective of leadership. And, you know, I'm just grateful that I got those opportunities, specifically at Notre Dame, to impact the culture, change the culture there at Notre Dame. And it's just been an amazing experience that I've gotten. And, you know, I definitely thank God for that.
You know, it's all upon you right now. The NFL draft's coming up. One last thought. You tweeted about a guy who's one of my favorites, Eric Weddle. When he retired, you tweeted, quote, "one of my favorite players ever. Thank you for showing the way," end quote. This, again, is a big Eric Weddle house. What did you like about watching him in his game? What did you learn from him?
Yeah, I mean, you know, first of all, on the field, he was so cerebral and balanced in the way that he could attack the field. And I felt like just his range and his passing and instincts overall was just something that, you know, you don't see every day on an NFL field and even at the highest level. And so for me, growing up as a kid, I always used to watch his games when he was at San Diego, and, you know, just seeing him, and I try to modern my game after him and seeing the different things that he done. So watching a lot of film and tape on him and what he does and how he attacks the field. And so I was just, you know, putting my hats out towards him and, you know, just being able to watch him and learn from the things that he's done on the field.
He played safety at Notre Dame. He was named to the Nagurski and Thorpe watch list, 74 tackles, 3 tackles for a loss, etc. He set that Notre Dame record for most tackles in a game with 19 against Clemson. And you've got the 2020 NFL draft getting underway April 23rd in Vegas. Alohi, I've certainly talked about you on the show, but you and I have never spoken before today. I'm glad we finally got to it. Good luck at the draft, and I'll look for you after you find out where you're going to live and work.
Thank you, Jim. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. Really well done. Alohi Gilman. How do you not get pumped up hearing a guy like that? Doubted his whole life, but always had an insane vision for himself and an insane belief in himself. Never gave in, never gave up, never believed anybody when they said, "You're not big enough, you can't get it done." A coach told him in eighth grade, "You can't play D1 football." And now here he is on the verge of the NFL draft. So a great story. What's your beef? What's your beef? I went back to back, 3 interviews in a row. Let me get you back involved here. What is your beef? Hit me up on the phones, 1-800-636-8686. Hit me up on Twitter at Jim Rome. Email me at Rome, R-O-M-E, at haveatake.com. What's your beef? Plenty more still to come. But right now I've got a sports update. Here's the latest on this Tuesday.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Time for the What's Your Beef segment. Next time you want a protein snack, ditch the drinks and the bars. Grab a bag of Old Trapper beef jerky instead. Tender, tasty, real beef that's going to rock your craving. For a snack that satisfies, ask for it by name because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef?
Is this the beef jerky segment?
It is now. I'm loaded on tweets and email. Phone lines are open. 1-800-636-8686. What is your beef? Call with your beef. Let's get it started with an email. Dear Rome, my beef is the incorrect and constant overusage of the word literally. My daughter and son both walk around the house saying literally before every thought. The entire population finds this acceptable. I cannot. We need to stop this as adults. Dear literally, give me back my son.
Give me back my son.
Signed, Brian in Sacramento. I feel you. Basically, didn't want any of that. I've got a little bit of that in my house. Basically. And like. How many of your kids say like all the time? I'll check Logan. I'll hit him with the buzzer every time he says it. Oh. Rome, my beef is with office sports guy. You know the type. All cocky about how he would wipe the floor with everyone in the office in every sport. Until he gets challenged to show up at the local court or run. And then all of a sudden, his once empty calendar is suddenly booked up for the next 6 months. Come on, Kevin. No names mentioned. Back up the talk or shut it.
Which doesn't put the...
Wore Alvin's triple-double at States. Jake in New York City.
Position? He wasn't...
Jim, my beef is with Southwest Airlines. Stewardesses turning the plane into the Laugh Factory. I don't need to hear jokes and snickering when talking about a possible water landing. Just put on the life jacket, show me how to use it, blow into the tube like the idiot you are, and please stop acting like you're doing me a favor by throwing a bag of peanuts at me and a Dixie cup worth of soft drink. Jim in Temecula. Rome, my beef is with guys named Adam. They're morons. Example, your EP Adam Hawk. And a guy I work with named Adam, no matter how much fun, no matter how much I make fun of him to his face, he will literally never understand that I'm actually making fun of him. They're morons. This one. My beef is with my boss. Today, my boss read the employees a message from corporate that says don't come to work sick to prevent the spread of illnesses. Even though she will write up anyone that calls in sick anytime. And she was coughing and sniffling while she read it to us. John in Illinois. The beefs keep coming.
Hey, John.
Romy, my beef is with male nurses that wear their scrubs out in public. We all know you're not an MD. You're a male nurse. Zach in the 479. Come on, Zach, do better. Rome, my beef is with Matt in LA, thinking people like to hear his calls. Mike in Snowbird. Dear Jim, my beef is with fast eater guy. I can't tell if this bozo loves food or hates it, but the greedy bastard needs to slow down. Is this guy actively trying to get fat? Or does he just want to finish early so he can sit there and watch me eat? I don't get it. And it's freaking weird, man. Brett from Bugaha. Doesn't anybody have like that one guy in the group who does that? I had a good friend of mine. We'd sit down to eat. And I'd just start talking or I'd get going. And I'd look around for a minute and I'd look back and his like plate was empty. I'm like, dude, is that a magic trick? How did you do that? And not one of those like sloppy guys either who gets food all over his shirt or his hair or his face. Just like a vacuum, like, just an entire meal, gonzo. Jimmy Jim, I got a beef with my best friend, whose new girlfriend reads poetry at the local bookstore every damn weekend. Look, I already went once to show my support for you and your gal. Truth is, I don't really like her. I like her poetry even less. Stop trying to get me to go, bro. I'm busy. That's a new one. Guy who's sick of his buddy's new girlfriend who reads poetry at the local bookstore every weekend. Dear Jim, my beef is with the guy in church who blows his nose all service, and then when it comes time to shake hands with your brothers and sisters, he engages like nothing ever happened. Justin from Melbourne. Dear Jim, there's a lot of beef today. I've got beef with tailgater guy or girl. The idiot that rides your bumper like there's a magnet attached to both cars. Hey, idiot, there's a truck in front of me going 35 and a 45. It's a single lane road. I'm not going anywhere, and neither are you, you freaking schmuck. I can't wait to see your rig upside down, wheels up one day, because karma is a bitch. James in Tucson. Most of us would agree with that. Hey, Jim. Uh-oh. My beef is with Girl Scouts selling cookies. Why don't they just cut to the chase and say, buy a box of cookies so you don't go through the rest of your day feeling like a penny-pinching, child-hating Grinch? They ambush you at the entrance to stores with their misguided enthusiasm, and they force you to end up telling some obvious lie so you can get out of the purchase. The cookies suck, and the sales pitches are painful. Dan in SF. I told you what I do in that situation, because I feel guilty and I want to help. I now buy the cookies and don't get the cookies. I just chip them off. Ladies, thank you very much. I'm going to make a donation. Otherwise, I will murder that sleeve tonight, and I can't have that. And I'm not going to give them to Rit. Rit's looking at me like, boss, buy the cookies, give them to me. That's breakfast, lunch, dinner, hors d'oeuvres. Hey, Rome. Imagine Hawk putting, okay, that didn't start with my beef is, so is this even a beef? Oh, the subject line reads beef with Hawk. Hey, Rome, imagine Hawk putting Jocko on hold and never getting him on the air. I'm not quite Jocko, but it's a good way to imagine it. 3-hour marathon is impressive. 4-hour marathon is pretty good if you're fat. 5 hours with a coach lets you get a sticker, I guess. That's not my beef. One day I called to say I was thankful for the podcast to run with. It helped me win the 2018 Baton Death March. The Sparrow couldn't find 20 seconds for me to say thanks. I also had a hilarious story about following David Faraday around the Orlando airport. He said it was a stupid story. Hawk is the worst. The high school loser holds all the power over actually accomplished people. Andrew in Albuquerque wore Pac-Man fever from 08. Wore the crew of Jolly 51. That's tough. Got any Pac-Man fever, Alvy?
I got a pocket full of hundreds and I'm headed to the strip club. Da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na. Jerry Jones hired me a nanny because he knows that I'm a thug. Da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na. My nanny bodyguard started talking back to my girl. He went to the bathroom and that's when he got floored because I got Pac-Man fever, Pac-Man fever. I'm a thug and I'm crazy. Thug and I'm crazy. Pac-Man fever, Pac-Man fever. Driving me crazy. It's driving me crazy.
I don't think we need another verse, do we? Memo to Pac-Man. Pac-Man, that's not me. It did happen on my show, but that's not me. And that was more than a decade ago. Let's go to the phones where there is more beef.
Garbage.
I hope this next call is not garbage.
Garbage.
R-E-X in the ABQ. Hello, Rex. Hello, Rex.
Hey, Romy. You know what? I've got a beef. Like anybody else, I'm concerned about the corona, but it's not going to keep me away from the Panda Express. So I was there for lunch the other day, and guess who's in front of me? Guy who asks for chopsticks at Panda Express. Hey, guy, who do you think you are? More importantly, where do you think you are? This isn't Geisha House. I know you think you're being cultured by using chopsticks on your double orange chicken, but you're not. You're just being an ass. And speaking of ass, better stop worrying about those chopsticks and get the bathroom code from that cashier instead, because everyone knows you're not getting out of the express without smoking out that gopher.
That's not a good call. No.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
Thanks, Rex. Thank you very much, Rex. We go to Dallas. Matt in Dallas. Matt, what is your beef?
I got beef with poor service at a packed restaurant. Like, I didn't choose your job. Don't give me poor service because your place is packed. Honestly, you should be glad it's packed. You're probably going to get a nice tip. That's my beef.
Got you, Matt. You know what's even worse than bad service during a busy time? Bad service when nobody's in the restaurant. 1-800-636-8686. We're wrapping up our What's Your Beef segment. We do it every single Tuesday. Let's go to Clearwater. Mike in Clearwater. Mike, what's your beef?
What's up, Jim? I got a beef with people that have service dogs with no apparent ailment whatsoever. They trot their little flea-ridden dogs into the restaurant, to the supermarket. They're totally fine. They can see fine. They can hear fine. They're walking fine. What do they need to bring that dog into the restaurant for? You know, they've got that stupid little vest, and they don't want you to look at it or touch it. Don't touch my service dog. It's a service dog. Don't approach my dog. Come on, get yourself together and leave your stupid mangy mutt at home. I'm out.
Angry much? Hey, Mike, what if they really do have a reason for having a service dog? What if they need a service dog? Mike, my man, I think you may need an emotional support dog to deal with your anger issues. Now, if we're not talking about service dogs, but rather just dogs that keep ending up in the restaurant, there's something to that. I love dogs. I don't have one right now. I had, as many of you know, we had three growing up. I didn't feel the need to bring them with me to the mall or the market or the restaurant or the bookstore or on an airplane. Or really anywhere other than around the block for a WALK. There is your beef segment. Good, good beef segment today. Great bounce back from last week where it was not nearly as good. Really good bounce back beef segment. Third hour's coming up and we're still wide open. I've done all the interviews. Barry Bonds feels like the world has turned its back on him. Why don't we talk about that when we come back?